This podcast is sponsored by Runway, air traffic control for your mobile releases. Put your releases on autopilot. Runway will shepherd your release from kickoff to submission to release with no manual intervention. A single source of truth for your releases. Runway integrates with your favorite tools for a bird's eye view over release progress and blockers. Make your releases collaborative. Get a rich, contextualized release runbook that makes capturing responsibilities and tracking tasks crystal clear. Get more control on your releases on App Store and Play Store. Point your browser to runway.team. Thank you for sponsoring my podcast. I'm also revamping my newsletter. Check it out, appforce1.net to sign up. You can also find a sign-up link on my Twitter profile. Hi, and welcome to the 72nd episode of my podcast. My name is Shino Lenaerts, and I've been developing software for over 19 years, developing iOS apps for over 9 years, and running the Dutch CoCats for over 8 years. If you're an iOS app developer, you should listen to my podcast because it will keep you updated on interesting articles, conferences, and events you might not have heard about. In this episode, I'm going to talk about how to use async await in synchronous Swift code with tasks, using the location button in Swift UI for one-time location access, state restoration in Swift UI, mixing Swift, Objective-C, Swift Package Manager and static frameworks, improved type safety with Swift Gen. So it's been an interesting week for me. At the start of the week, I did a Try Swift workshop, and the workshop went well, I think, even though I had some major technical issues. But these technical issues I was able to overcome with some smart thinking, and fortunately we had like a good code lab that people could work on while I was straightening out the issues I had with my laptop. Biggest issue was the CPU getting saturated, even though I have a MacBook 13-inch with an M1 chip in it, but running Zoom, Xcode, and green screening at the same time doesn't really work well, it seems. So in the end, I was able to get the workshop going, and people really enjoyed themselves. But next time, I'm definitely going to try out my workshop in the full setup with all the software running, because I did my initial trial runs without running Zoom. All in all, it was a bit challenging, but it did work out in the end. So next to that, my son got chickenpox on Friday, which was kind of interesting because he didn't have that children's illness yet. So it was all itchy. And then a day later, my daughter started having chickenpox. So it was a really interesting weekend that we had as a family. So two kids that were ill, two kids that were really itchy, and two kids that were totally unhappy because they just weren't feeling very well. My daughter is still at home. My son is back to school again on Monday. But yeah, for my daughter, it's I hope that she recovers quickly because she's still running quite high a temperature. And then there's a third topic that happened last week. Swift Heroes announced their lineup for their conference, and I'm one of the speakers at this lineup. And if you've seen this initial lineup, one thing that was immediately clear is that they forgot to check the diversity of the lineup, because once I opened the page, it was just 14 white dudes staring back at me, which isn't a really good picture. So I went internal with that with Stream and had a lot of back and forth with other community members. And in the end, several people wrote into the organizers of Swift Heroes, and it seems they've got the message and that they're really working on fixing their lineup and making sure that this doesn't happen again in the future. And it just goes to show how hard it is to do a conference, because there's so many details. And this is one of those things, if you just don't stop and think about the lineup and the way it looks, then this is something that you would put live. Even though that all the individual speakers on the lineup, I think, are great, it's always good to have a look at your lineup as a conference and just see what kind of a picture you're representing to the world. And it was very clear that Swift Heroes did not take this step when they were putting together their lineup. But I'm told they're fixing things, and hopefully we'll get some new faces on their lineup soon. On top of that, we also had the new Mac hardware announcements. It's interesting what Apple has announced. I'm not going to go too much in the technical details of everything that they launched. The biggest question that I had to answer myself, which was easy for me, is am I going to be buying any of this new hardware? I don't think so, because my desk setup right now is pretty much complete. I have a 27-inch LG screen in front of me, and I have a MacBook M1 Pro available. So that's the 13-inch model. And yeah, the performance of that thing is more than enough for me, at least in most cases. Not when I'm running Zoom, Xcode, and green screening at the same time. For some reason, that wasn't working too well for me. But looking at this new studio display in this Mac Studio device, I really like the way that this new display is looking, all the ports that are on it. Not sure yet if it's enough ports for my use case, but also the number of ports on it, the features that the screen has. So it's a nice big screen, a decent panel in there, a webcam, good audio, at least as good as audio you can have on the screen. So I think if you would get cheaper options and start adding all those together to get like a similar quality experience, I don't think the prices differ that many. And the advantage of the studio display is that everything is combined into one device. So there's a lot of cable clutter that you won't be having on your desk when using this screen. So yeah, if I would have like a completely empty desk, then yeah, I would very much like to look into a studio display as an option. But yeah, not for me right now. On the Mac Studio, yeah, it's just an amazing device to see, and it makes me totally excited for what Apple is going to be announcing in the next 12 months. Because yeah, if they start working on their follow-up our CPU for the M1 chip, then most likely the performance is going to be even better. I must say that I really like the technical aspects of the Mac Studio device, but yeah, these M1 Ultra chip, that's like pretty wild what they're doing there, just the sheer number of transistors that's on a single die. And yeah, it's just great to see that this choice for Apple Silicon is working out so well for Apple and the performance that they're really getting out of these devices. So all in all, I like the new green color on the new iPhones, or should I say new iPhones, the recolored iPhones. I like that they introduced a new iPhone SE, and looking forward to any announcement that they're going to do in the second half of this year. Because by that time, I think it's about time that I start looking into a new iPhone. I have a 2.5-year-old device right now, which still works very well for me, including the battery. So yeah, we'll just see. And yeah, hopefully a half year from now, I might start looking into my next Apple device, really. So let's dive into these news articles, because I did quite a long introduction. First article of this week is the How to Use Async Await in Synchronous Code with Tasks. It's an article by Natasha Fedeva, and it's a quick overview of how you can make synchronous bits of code asynchronous. So it's using the async modifier on a function declaration, and then the await modifier when calling these functions. So really good to see. It really shows how simple it can be to do something asynchronously. It's a bit short circuit, because you have to take some things into account if you're doing asynchronous code execution, but still, just seeing how simple and easy this is really nice. And second article is by Moritz Philipp Recke. It's using the location button in SwiftUI for one-time location access. It's again a reasonably short article, and it showcases how you can use the location button in SwiftUI to basically get the location from the user each time the user presses this button. So what this allows you to do is you don't have to request the user location access. So you don't have to do an authorization challenge to the user. It's just if the user uses this button, then for a short duration, your app gets access to the authorized when in use authorization for location. And it's a temporary authorization that you get. So it's really convenient. It saves you a lot of hassle if you just want to get a location from the user one time. And it's very nice in line with the privacy guidelines that Apple tries to adhere to with their software development. So if location access is used very infrequently, maybe even only once, then using a location button is the best option that you have. This article really shows how you can use this button, what's involved with implementing this button in your code. And it's quite straightforward, just a few lines. And yeah, before you know it, you have like the location of the user available once when you need it. Next article is by Majid. It's State Restoration in SwiftUI. So we always want to provide a great user interface and a user experience to the users of our apps, right? And the system can shut down your app when the user leaves it. And when the user then relaunches the app, as a user, you would expect that you could pick up where you left off, right? But if you don't do anything special, the current state of the app is lost, and this is a bad user experience. So to avoid these kinds of situations, there's a concept called state restoration, and this state restoration mechanism is also available in SwiftUI. And in the article by Majid, you get the basics of what you need to do to make sure that state restoration works in your SwiftUI app. So have a read of this article, because especially if you have a user interface that has some more involved structure in it, it's very useful for your end users to be able to put your app in the background and then later pick up the app where they left off without having to navigate back to the location in your app where they were when they backgrounded your app. The third article is by Paolo Andrade. It's called Mixing Swift, Objective-C, SPM, and Static Frameworks. There's always something new that you can work with as a software developer, a new framework, a new IDE, a new CPU architecture, a new language, new dependency management. But so for any moderately large projects, it's impossible to just keep up with all this stuff, right? So you shouldn't even try, really, but otherwise you'd be spending writing your code again and again every time that something new arrives. Paolo has been working on the Secrets app for 10 years. Highly recommend this app because it's really neat. And there's been parts of this code that were written before Arc was available. You can still find retainer release calls in that code today. And as Paolo mixes more and more new stuff with the old, he gets to deal with some tricky issues. And in this article, he goes into some details of one of these issues that he ran into. That basically involves things and challenges that he had to face when doing what the article title says, mixing Swift Objective-C, Swift Package Manager, and Static Frameworks. So have a read of this article. It really educates you a little bit on what kind of strange issues you can run into if you have to maintain a code base for a longer duration. And it's just a fun read, and I really enjoyed the technical challenge that Paolo presented and how he was able to overcome it. And then there's a final article that I think is a bit more thought-provoking. It's called Improved Type Safety with SwiftGen. And SwiftGen is a utility that allows you to generate Swift code on the fly, so during your compilation. So yeah, but why would you want to use a code generation tool, right? Well, typically you would include a call to SwiftGen in your project's build phase, which will update auto-generated code to reflect the current state of your project and its resources. This helps you ensure that any potential issues related to removed assets, colors, localized tags, segues, storyboards, and those kinds of things are raised as compile time errors instead of runtime errors. Simply put, if a developer on your team accidentally removes a resource that is currently in use by a project, you will now see a clear compile time message. Simply put, if a developer on your team accidentally removes a resource that is currently in use in your project, you will now see a clear compile time message instead of a crash at runtime when you attempt to access the resource. I think a very worthwhile thing, especially if you're dealing with larger code bases, right? So have a look at this article to see what SwiftGen can do for you and how you can integrate it with your project if this is something that you might find interesting. So those were the articles of this week. I just want to quickly wrap it up because I'm already way past 15 minutes. If you have any questions or feedback on my podcast, please let me know on Twitter at AppForce1. And just send me a message. Let me know what you think. I always look forward to your feedback, and talk to you again next time.
Lead Developer, best practices and tips for lead software developers. PDF, MOBI and EPUB format. AppForce1.net/lead developer. All one word.